I'm Dave Hill, the man with a plan, the guy well-equipped to host this show. Thank you. This week on The Novelizers, from Baywatch, John Bass. From Futurama, they all thought I was going to say Pamela Anderson when I said from Baywatch, but I meant John Bass. From Futurama, Patrick Verone. And from The Tonight Show, Natasha Bainblatt. This show so good. Who books this show? I want to get on this show. You book this show, Steven?
I don't know how I do it. People just say yes.
Really something.
Yeah.
Welcome to The Novelizers, the show where comedy writers take classic films and, you know, they rewrite them and then other people read them. I don't know. That's the gist of it, right, Steven?
That's it. Yeah.
All right.
Think of an audiobook based on a film, but funny.
Yeah.
It's not so hard to understand. I don't know why people are like, I don't get it.
Yeah.
I don't get it. It's easy.
It's not that hard.
It's just a funny audiobook based on a movie with celebrity guests. And then an improv based on someone who's like, pretends to be working behind the scenes on the movie.
Yeah, duh.
And we divide every movie up into 20 chapters, 20 different writers, 20 different narrators. It's easy.
Yeah, what's the problem? Did I mention that we're doing The Dark Knight, the hit movie The Dark Knight?
We are.
Yeah, it's The Dark Knight. This week on the show, Patrick M. Verone. That's right. He's an Emmy-winning TV writer, producer, attorney, what? Figurine maker, what? And labor leader. Are these all true things?
He gave me the bio.
I have follow-up questions. Anyway, his writing credits include The Tonight Show, starring Johnny Carson, The Larry Sanders Show, The Critic, The Simpsons, Pinky and the Brain, Rugrats, and every episode of Matt Groening's animated sci-fi comedy Futurama. Not too shabby.
Quite a resume.
I haven't written for, I'm checking. Oh, I haven't written for any of those shows. Anyway, John Bass is an actor and writer who started his career on Broadway replacing Josh Gad as Elder Cunningham in The Book of Mormon. I was going to do that, but I was busy. In film, John was recently cast in the upcoming Ron Howard film, Alone at Dawn, alongside Adam Driver and Anne Hathaway. Those are popular actors. This guy,
let's get them on the show.
I'm starting to feel inadequate. Natasha Bainblatt has written for The Tonight Show, starring Jimmy Fallon, A Little Late with Lily Singh, Audible's Bloodweed, and Comedy Central's Your Worst Fears Confirmed. Her stand-up album, We're All Dads Here, was featured in Vulture's Albums to Watch Right Now. And she's currently performing her new hour, Childless Freak, all about her choice not to have kids. We also did a show together in Tarrytown. I realize it's not, you know, as big of a credit as the things I just mentioned, but it resonated with me.
I've been to that Tarrytown theater. It's lovely.
The one, the Arc?
Yeah, I saw it's like a beautiful old theater in Tarrytown.
Maybe
Tarrytown has two theaters. I saw Amy Mann in Tarrytown, and it was.
I have performed two theatres in Tarrytown. Okay. It's beautiful. Yeah, but I think you're thinking of a different one.
Maybe.
Which I've also performed at, if that was your next question.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't want to put you on the spot or offend anyone, but which is the more beautiful Tarrytown theater? Are they both equally beautiful?
Both beautiful. I mean, I'd strangle a baby before I would tell you which I thought was prettier.
Hollywood move, except for the strangling the baby thing.
No, yeah. I'm not encouraging that at all.
Yeah.
This time around on The Novelizers, Bruce decides to go after the Joker. That's, you know, it's a bad guy. Although Alfred warns him that some men just want to watch the world burn.
John Bass. Novelize us.
Us.
The Dark Knight, Chapter 11. What Some Men Like to Watch. Novelized by Patrick M. Verone. Narrated by John Bass. Bruce Wayne sat down in front of a console of video screens. Bruce knew that if he was going to defeat the Joker, he would have to understand him. And in order to understand him, he would have to watch hours of surreptitiously obtained surveillance video, just like he had with Rachel. But she was with Harvey now. He better watch her videos again. But right now, the task at hand was to watch the Joker. Videos were scant and generally unhelpful. A lot of grainy footage of him dancing at the bottom of a staircase and spray painting artworks at the MoGA, the Museum of Gotham Art, and even surfing in a full suit underneath his board shorts. Man, that guy's a freak, Bruce thought as he scrutinized a close-up. Is that a mustache under his makeup? He wondered aloud. Would that help you understand him if it was? Bruce jumped out of his chair. Stop sneaking up on me, Alfred. Alfred Pennyworth, stately Wayne Manners, stately Wayne Butler stood behind Bruce. He pushed a button on the console and raises a bat cabinet that houses the bat suit, which he just got back from the bat dry cleaners.
Criminals aren't complicated, Alfred, said Bruce. We just need to figure out what he's after.
With respect, Master Wayne, responded Alfred, who always began a sentence with respect when he was about to say something without respect. Bruce knew that and prepared himself.
Perhaps this is a man you don't fully understand either.
Okay, that wasn't so bad, thought Bruce, but Alfred wasn't finished.
A long time ago, I was in Burma, he continued.
Of course it was a long time ago, Bruce thought. That place has been called Myanmar since the late 80s. What do you take me for? Oh, maybe that was a without respect thing he was planning to say.
The caravans were being raided in a forest north of Rangoon by a bandit, continued Alfred.
Oh, crap, thought Bruce. He's still talking and I haven't been listening. What was that about Rangoon? Wait, Rangoon hasn't been called Rangoon since the 40s. How old is this old coot?
One day I saw a child playing with a ruby the size of a tangerine, concluded Alfred, adding, the bandit had been throwing them away.
Bruce nodded, but then realized he had a line to say.
So why steal them? Asked Bruce.
Because some men aren't looking for anything logical like money. They can't be bought, bullied, reasoned, or negotiated with.
Alfred leaned on the next line.
Some men just want to watch the world burn.
Wayne stared at Alfred.
That's a scene ender if I've ever heard one, thought Bruce. A real button punch.
Except it wasn't. Alfred wasn't finished.
Some men just want to watch the world flood.
Huh, thought Bruce. Not as good. But there was more.
Some men just want to watch the world hydroplane on an oil slick and careen into a tree. Some men just want to watch the world choke on a ham sandwich in the tub. Some men just want to watch the world stub its toe on the bedpost.
Wait, what?
Questioned Bruce silently, but oh Christ, there was still more.
Some men just want to watch ladies in cat suits dance on rooftops in the moonlight.
Well, that was a completely different tangent, Bruce thought, holding back the urge to raise his hand and say, I am one of those men.
Until their boyfriends sneak up from behind and pick the world's pocket and then run up their credit cards on Etsy.
Oddly specific, but back to a pattern at least.
And some men just like to watch Monday Night Football.
By putting an and at the beginning, Bruce thought he was done.
Nope. Some men just like to watch their butlers stand on tiptoes, belly dance like a hula girl, and armpit fart John Jacob Jingleheimer Schmidt.
Okay, that was enough. End of scene or not, Bruce got the hell out of there. He put on his bat suit, got in the bat elevator, turned on his bat headphones, and made a beeline, a bat line, for the roof. Overlooking the Gotham skyline, Bruce tuned in the police radio frequency, the frequency reserved for messages about unwanted kids on the front lawn and unresponsive elders on the kitchen floor. One message stood out.
8th and Orchard,
said the mysterious voice, using an auto-tune program to conceal his Joker-like identity.
You'll find Harvey Dent there.
Not yet, Commissioner Gordon and Officer Ramirez raced to the scene, despite the obviously unlicensed auto-tune program, or maybe because of it. Either way, action-packed police procedure required them to kick in the door at 8th and Orchard. Unfortunately, the building at 8th and Orchard is a four-story walk-up, so there were a lot of doors still to kick in. Good thing they brought some nameless, able-bodied patrolmen. The last apartment they visited was a site of a grisly scene.
It's always the last one, isn't it?
Muttered Gordon. Two men were hunched over a small kitchen table, each with a hand of playing cards. All jokers. They wore pancake makeup and had grotesque leers carved into their faces. Dead. Or at least, really good at holding their breath. Each man had his driver's license pinned to his chests.
"Check the names,"
said a deep off-screen voice that sounded like a brick trying to sound American.
It was Batman.
"Richard Dent
and Patrick Harvey,"
replied Gordon, also fashioning an American accent to cover his own British birth.
"Harvey Dent,"
observed Officer Ramirez. No one knew whether she was British or cared.
"That doesn't work,"
she protested.
"I mean, he said we'd find Harvey Dent, not Harvey and Dent. He didn't say the and. It really doesn't work."
No one cared about her high-pitched whine. Batman was making his own high-pitched whine by sawing a chunk of wall containing a bullet hole, and Gordon was on his phone. Once he'd lost the eBay auction he was watching, Gordon turned to notice what Batman was doing.
"Well, that's brick. You're gonna take ballistics off a shattered bullet?"
said Gordon smugly.
"No,"
Batman replied even more smugly.
"Fingerprints."
Batman stuck out his tongue and made a bluser sound.
"Well, whatever you're gonna do, do it fast," smugged Gordon, "'cause we've found his next target."
Gordon held up a newspaper he'd found under one of the dead men. It was open to the obituary page. A headline read, "Mayor Anthony Garcia, dedicated public servant." The mayor's photo had whiteface makeup drawn on it and the words, "Ha, ha, ha," written all over.
"He's put it in tomorrow's paper,"
Gordon announced in an expository overdub.
"Wait a minute," objected Ramirez. "That doesn't make any sense at all. If it's in tomorrow's paper, how did he get a copy of it? It must be today's paper, but then how did no one notice it before now?"
She could have gone on and on, but everyone had either left or was on their phone again. Batman drove like a bat out of patience back to his bat barracks to carefully examine the chunk of cement with the bullet hole. His examination would consist of a simple test. He would draw an identical grid on five identical rifle bullets, load them into a remote-control Gatling gun, dawling along a track that would identically fire them into five identical brick wall samples, then photograph the samples with an X-ray scanner and compare the high-resolution 3D images of the bullet fragment arrays to the crime scene original. Simple. Once home, Bruce got undressed, leaving his bat suit and a pile on the floor of the bedroom for Alfred to pick up. This was a far cry from the days when he could just shoot up the bat pole and be dressed in his civvies again, but that technology hadn't existed since the 60s. Down in the bat bunker, Bruce handed Alfred the five gridded bullets. Alfred loaded them into the gun as Bruce put on ear protectors. The gun blasted the five brick samples with a deafening rhythm.
Blam! 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 Blam!
Bruce watched for the starburst that included the word blam, but that too was a relic of the 60s. As smoke rose from the smoldering bricks, Alfred, slightly dazed and genuinely deafened, snarkily shouted,
"I'm not sure you made it loud enough, sir."
Bruce removed his ear protectors and snarked back,
"What?"
As he lost consciousness, Alfred quipped,
"You're only supposed to blow the bloody doors off."
Bruce, deep in thought, didn't respond as Alfred crumpled to the floor like so many bat suits he'd begrudgingly picked up. Meanwhile, in another part of the empire, Coleman Reese, Wayne Enterprises' most lollipop-headed lawyer, was working in the corporate archives, researching the Lau Security investment deal, hoping to find something that would get him promoted from second vice president of brown nosing to chief ass kisser. And lo and behold, he did. Reese took his finding directly to Lucius Fox. He charged into Fox's office as if to catch him off guard, but that's a tough thing to do when your office has glass walls. Sitting behind a desk, Fox looked up from the script of the Nature documentary he was reading.
"What can I do for you, Mr. Reese?" asked Lucius.
Reese liked that Lucius called him Mr. Reese, not only because it was a sign of respect, but because it sounded like mysteries, which would make a good moniker if he ever wanted to become a Gotham villain like the Riddler or the Puzzler or Lollipop Head. In actuality, Lucius called him that because he never learned his first name. Reese began,
"You wanted me to do the due diligence on the LSI Holdings deal again. Well, I found some irregularities."
Fox nodded.
"Their CEO is in police custody."
And he thought,
"Shouldn't Reese's head be more pointy, like the other nerds?"
Reese went on.
"No, I found irregularities on our sites. The research and development division of Wayne Enterprises was making cell phones for the Omni until it just disappeared, overnight. And I found this in the blueprint archives."
He handed Lucius a folded blueprint. Fox removed his reading glasses and unfolded the blueprint.
Then he put his reading glasses back on to look at it. Then he took them off to look at Reese skeptically.
"Don't tell me you didn't recognize your baby pancaking cop cars on the evening news," smirked Reese.
The baby he was talking about wasn't an actual human baby, which would have indeed been hard to miss pancaking cop cars on the evening news, but rather the mechanical baby shown in the blueprint, the Batmobile Lucius had built for Batman, called the Tumbler.
Reese continued his pitch. "I want $10 million a year for the rest of my life."
Lucius leaned forward in his chair and spoke slowly and simply, as if teaching a reading lesson on the electric company.
"Let me get this straight. You think that one of the wealthiest, most powerful men in the world is secretly a vigilante who beats criminals to a pulp with his bare hands, and your plan is to blackmail this person?"
Reese was dumbfounded. His immediate thought was to say, "Okay, $9 million a year." But Lucius punctuated the scene with a smile and a cheerful,
"Good luck."
Humiliated, Reese motioned to the blueprint and said, "Just keep that." He left quickly and quietly wondering, maybe he'd go for $8 million. But something Reese had said piqued Lucius's interest and he headed over to Applied Sciences. Once there, he found Bruce Wayne staring at video screens again.
"Man, this guy is obsessive," he thought. "Help me out here, Lucius," pled Bruce. "I'm really rich and smart, and I've got all these buttons on this cool console, but I don't know which one to push to reassemble the digitized surface of the 3D bullet fragments."
Lucius rolled his eyes and thought, "How many times do I have to do this?"
He pointed at one screen and said, "This is your original scan," pushed a button marked re-engineered, and said,
"Here it is, re-engineered."
On screen, the unmarked bullet fragments reassemble into a roughly bullet-shaped puzzle. Bruce bonked his forehead with his palm.
"Duh. And there's the thumbprint Joker left when he pushed the bullet into the clip."
Lucius looked impressed.
"I'll get you a copy," he said, pushing a button marked copy.
Then a troubled look came over him.
"Mr. Wayne," he asked, "did you reassign R&D?
Bruce nodded.
"Government telecommunications project,"
Lucius replied.
"I wasn't aware we had any new government contracts,"
Bruce replied back.
"I'm playing this one pretty close to the chest."
Bruce opened his jacket to show Lucius a typed treatment. Lucius speed read it.
"Let me get this straight," posed Lucius. "You're making a podcast of a novelization of a movie based on a comic book character for which you don't own any of the rights."
Bruce Wayne put his finger to his lips in the universal motion for STFU. Lucius smiled and said,
"Fair enough."
And we'll be right back with more novelizers right after this. What does a commercial go now or something?
If someone will buy it, pay for one.
I'm more on the creative end of things, but I would talk to those guys over at Tide.
Maybe let's just do a host bread ad for Tide and then build them.
Tide. You got clothes. They're going to get dirty. Tide.
Don't throw them out and buy new clothes.
Yeah, just wash them in Tide. What are you, a fucking idiot?
Yeah.
How's that? Too much?
We'll give them a discount.
And we're so back. It's not even funny how back we are. Every week on the show, we talk to someone who worked on the film The Dark Knight. This episode's no different. What do you think, Steven? Should we hear that interview?
Flip a coin, just like Two-Face would.
Yeah.
Flip, landed on heads. That means we hear the interview.
Let's hear it.
How's it going, everybody? This is the Novelizers. I am here with Mathilde.
Mathilde. Yeah.
And
not
she
a hard T.
Hard T.
Soft T.
Mathilde.
Yeah. But the D is hard.
Okay. Mathilde.
Yes.
And she is part of, she was a crafty at the movie The Dark Knight.
Head of crafty, in fact.
Oh, I'm so sorry for this.
Yeah. Oh, that's okay. There's a really rigid hierarchy when it comes to crafty. Mm-hmm. So I only say that so the crafty community doesn't get upset and get, you know. come after me.
What is it crafty, for those who don't know?
Well, you know, there's, even within our work, there's a lot of different beliefs on what is crafty. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. some people think it's just the food, you know, that you set up kind of on the side of set so people can get snacks and mm-hmm. things in between breaks. But mm-hmm. I think of it as a continuation of the film process. You know, it's okay. not a break. It's not a break from the film. Mm-hmm. The kind of the art continues when you head to crafty. And there's actually a lot of fighting on the set of Dark Knight because of that.
A lot of fighting.
A lot of fighting.
That's, see, like, the novelizers, we like to talk about you, yeah. but there's moments, there's little gems and nuggets
yeah.
where we get to the juicy stuff.
Yeah, and
when you speak of fighting, yeah.
Yeah, well, you know, the way I, again, approach crafty is from a craft perspective, mm-hmm. you know? Mm-hmm. And so I don't necessarily bring food that I think the actors need. I bring food that I think the characters need.
Now that's interesting. Yeah. So when you do that, have you got any backlash from not giving the actors or actresses what they need, but the characters?
Oh, tons. Everyone gets very upset.
Yeah. Okay. Anybody yeah. specifically?
Well, Heath Ledger was furious.
Okay.
Okay, because as a Joker, for the, you know, continuation of his character, I said only spicy food. Spiciest foods.
Yeah.
You know, he's got to be very hot, very sweaty. That makeup's yeah. got to drip off. So I pretty much stock kind of his area mm-hmm. with really spicy peppers. Anything on the Scoville scale that's mm-hmm. kind of right at the high end. Mm-hmm. And I trick him, obviously. You
okay.
know, he'd be like, hey, is this spicy? And I would say, absolutely not. Mm-hmm. You know, and it would look like just a piece of broccoli.
Mm-hmm.
Turns out it's actually one of the it's a ghost pepper.
You just like, is it caked it? Like, you know, is it caked? You make it look like broccoli?
Well, you say, and if then, you fry it, no one knows what it is.
That's true. You fry anything, yeah. Put it yeah. some flour and batter it. You know,
exactly.
you fry anything.
Exactly.
When it comes to making stuff for the characters,
yes.
I don't know why, but I just feel like Batman's allergic to chocolate. I don't know if he is, but he just seems like an allergic to chocolate type
well,
of guy.
Well, bats are, I don't know if bats are allergic to chocolate, mm-hmm. but I approach it that way.
Oh, so
you know?
It's not about Batman. It's about that
well, he's channeling the energy of
exactly.
a bat.
Exactly. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So for him, mostly nightshades, you know, so
okay.
that's any kind of mushroom, anything that kind of stimulates a dark, sleepy atmosphere,
mm-hmm.
you know, especially because a bat, you know, they're kind of thriving at night,
mm-hmm.
you know, but sleep during the day. So I would try to put a lot of sedatives in his food.
Oh,
just
okay.
so that he would be, if we're filming during the day, he should be sleepy.
That makes sense.
So that's his
yeah.
time. That's his time to hibernate.
So that the voices he was doing as Batman, those are just his sleepy voices.
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Makes sense. Makes
That's
sense.
How you get kind of that deep, like,
yeah,
oh,
yeah,
I
tired.
Should be kind
I'm
of
here.
Napping.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay, that
and
makes
sense.
And
I got sense. A lot of pushback from him as well.
Really?
You know? Yeah. The actors were ruthless on set, I will say.
So how did you get this job? You know, like, a lot of people have their stories on how they was able to get
yeah.
this call and stuff. How did you get this job?
Yeah. Well, you know Photoshop?
Yeah.
So I just took a resume, made a bunch of lies on it,
mm-hmm.
and then sent it off. So,
yeah, I think that's like 90% of America. We lie
yeah.
on our resumes anyway.
Yeah.
So that's
yeah.
that's a very true
yeah,
story.
Here's the thing. I like food.
Mm-hmm.
I mostly work at Trader Joe's.
Mm-hmm.
But I was like, you know what? Let's kind of branch out. They were really weird about kind of the snack choices that I was trying to push, you know, at the stores.
Were they all Trader Joe's?
What's up?
Were they all Trader Joe's
yeah,
branded?
Exclusively. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
exactly. So I'm kind of in charge of a lot of Trader Joe's snacks that you've never even seen.
Mm-hmm.
So I, as an artist,
mm-hmm.
felt that I was being stifled. And so I thought, where's the heart of creativity? That's a film set. I have a friend, ex, you know, but we're still friends. I like to stay friends with all my exes.
Not a problem.
Thank you. You know, a lot of people think that is a problem.
I don't think it's a problem at all. As long as you guys get along.
Yes. Good. Mm-hmm. And we live together, you know.
Okay.
So we're
raising the problem meter, but we're not all the way
well,
there.
You can't live with a
raising.
Friend?
I mean, I guess you can, you know, who am I to judge? You know
exactly.
what I'm saying? It's New York.
You know, and, mm-hmm. and bodies talk the way that they talk.
Yeah. Yeah, they
right.
do.
Yeah.
yeah.
So, I'm sorry, what was the question?
No, that was you answered it. And then we got more in there, you know?
yes.
Yeah. So you talk about working at Trader Joe's and then doing this. Are you like a good cook? Or like, are
no,
you?
Oh God, no.
Oh, you're not a good
no,
cook.
No, no. And I just assemble. You know, I don't cook anything. I'm more of kind of a forager mentality. So let's find it in the wild. Let's find it at another store.
Mm-hmm.
That sort of thing. No, I just I've never kind of understood ovens or microwaves.
Okay.
I find all the numbers in the dials confusing.
Okay. Was there anybody on set that actually like absolutely loved what you did on set?
Gary Oldman.
He loved it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But I mostly gave him porridge.
He seems like a porridge guy.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't need hard stuff. I don't need
just
hard things
really
to eat. Just very
soft.
I just want to mush.
Yeah.
You know
and
saying?
For that, you know, his last name, Old Man.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's kind of what I channeled there. That's
Makes
what he
sense.
Needs. He needs porridge. Mm-hmm. He's anything kind of smooth slides down the gullet with not a lot mm-hmm. of chewing.
Okay. What type of food would it look like? Like if I was on set and you like, this guy needs
yeah.
food.
Well, I'd need to know your character.
My character is, he's a single dad.
Okay.
Who is trying to.
First of all, DiGiorno comes to mind.
DiGiorno, okay. Single dad. Working like with his, got to take his son to work, and he's working like at the trying to get in the stock market, trying to get a job
wow,
doing
okay,
stocks
that
and stuff.
Changes things.
Yeah, trying to get a job. The mom was there, but she left. My character is very reminiscent to Pursuit of Happiness.
Yes.
So yeah, it's just a lot of that. That's my character.
You know, then I would honestly feed you what I fed Aaron Eckhart, which is those chocolate gold coins. A lot of that. So maybe a pile of that.
Yeah, a pile. Yeah.
Yeah. A pile of that. And then, you know, I guess Lunchables. I feel like that's kind of, whenever I think of kind of divorced dad, mm-hmm. it's just anything that's kind of quick to assemble, kind of mm-hmm. a sad mm-hmm. meal. Right?
Yeah.
So that's probably I would do that.
I like that. And then when I think of Lunchables, it's like it's a sad meal, but it also gives you the feeling of a charcuterie board. So it's
it
like,
does.
You know, you kind of feel
it's
like
kind
you
of a family still.
Exactly.
Exactly.
Exactly. They work all together.
Yeah.
How was life after the movie? You
Horrible.
Know, because okay, all right.
Just terrible.
Like from
for
a work
me,
perspective?
It was a dark night, honestly.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, you couldn't find work, or is it like
a lot of lawsuits? A lot of lawsuits from kind of well, apparently my crafty affected the performance of the actors in a way that they had to do so many reshoots. And so the production billed me for that.
Mm.
They said I was responsible because, you know, Batman fell asleep.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Joker was honestly having diarrhea 24/7 because all the spices running right through him.
Yep.
You know,
mm-hmm.
Gary Oldman, you know, he's just covered in porridge.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
So that's just kind of a VFX can't really fix that. Gets stuck kind of in his beard.
But I think the silver lining in your work is the because you gave them that food.
Yes.
That made their character.
Absolutely.
Christian Bale is known for that Batman voice.
Absolutely.
Right?
That's why I've been protesting. I think the Oscars needs to have a crafty, you know, award because we are very much still encouraging an excellent performance. The work that we do affects what you see on screen.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly. Get it together, guys. We need the war for that.
Mm-hmm.
So before we sign off, is there anything, any inspiration you would like to give people who wants to provide nourishment or food for the characters, and how would they get into the business?
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, again, Photoshop is really wonderful, or really any kind. Nowadays, you can just kind of find a PDF of a good resume, upload it to Google Docs, switch out a little bit, download it again as a PDF.
Yeah. So, okay.
So as a crafty, that's kind of my advice.
Real quick. I missed it the first time, and I apologize as a journalist that I am. I missed this. You said you use Photoshop for your resume?
I did.
Like,
look,
was
I think
it, pictures,
pictures are
important. Okay. I was like, did you Photoshop an actual
Word
resume?
What I did is I took a menu.
Okay.
I took a menu, a very popular menu, and then I just kind of changed a little bit of it. But you have to do that in Photoshop.
Okay, gotcha.
You can't do that in Google Drive.
Makes perfect sense. Makes perfect sense.
Mm-hmm.
All right, guys. We would like to thank Mathilde.
Thank you so much.
For joining us today. You guys take it easy. This has been The Novelizers.
Thank you, Kevin. That was magical. That's the stuff. All right, that's our show for tonight. I mean, it is 3:30 in the afternoon when we're recording this, but whatever. Join us next week when we welcome the amazing Chris Parnell. It's another solid gold episode. How'd you book Chris Parnell? What do you know, everyone in Hollywood?
I somehow do. I really don't know. Wait, and what's funny is that you're the guy who knows everyone in Hollywood, but you don't book the show.
I don't. You would think that's more of a power move on my part. I do know everyone in Hollywood, but I don't book the show.
Maybe some episode I'll have you book.
Maybe.
Yeah. We're working our way up to that.
Yeah. I'll check my email. Special thanks to this week's guests, John Bass, Patrick M. Verone, and Natasha Vainblatt. What do you think? Should we ride off into the podcasting sunset for this episode?
Let's do it. Giddy up.
The Novelizers is hosted by me, Dave Hill, was Stephen Levinson and produced by Stephen, Dennis DiClaudio, Cole Emhoff, Graham Douglas, Kevin Carter, Christine Boland, Rob Kuttner, and Marla Ratner, and distributed by Cincinnati Public Radio. Editing and mixing by Graham Douglas. Music by Cole Emhoff. Theme song by Andrew Lynn, recorded by Knotts. Additional editing by Andrew Lynn and Sunita Haberline. Special thanks to Brad Combs and Parabolic Studio in Manhattan. Follow The Novelizers on Instagram and support us on Patreon. The Novelizers is written and recorded without the use of AI. The Novelizers is an unauthorized work of parody. Copyright 2025, Novelizers, LLC.